Welcome, everybody, this morning. Hope you're enjoying the beautiful weather we're having and have time to get outside into it. In the meantime, I hope it remains cool in here so that we can enjoy that as well. We have two announcements this morning. The first one is from Robert regarding Family Promise. So I'm going to invite Robert up.
Good morning. Our church has its weekly turn for a week of hosting families, homeless children and their families for Family Promise starting Sunday, September 6th through, they'll be leaving Sunday, early morning, September 13th. So there is a sign-up genius online, which you may have seen through LeCook's, or you can see this in the social hall after the service. And if you have any questions, if you've gone through the training, you're welcome to sign up. If you haven't had the training, please talk to me, and we'll find out about getting you trained. We have a partner church, Church of the Resurrection in Pewaukee. It's a Lutheran church, and they will be taking Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday as their responsibility. Although if you'd like to stay overnight on those nights, we oftentimes have one person from their church and one person from our church. We're very happy to participate in Family Promise. The three families that we hosted the last time it was our turn have all found permanent housing. They've been successful at finding jobs, and the program has been going very well. So thanks for your support.
And Reverend Amy Shaw has an announcement.
As most of you may be aware, our Black Lives Matter banner was vandalized this week. We believe on Sunday, but possibly Monday. They cut the word black out. This is not a unique phenomenon here. It has happened across the country. The publicity received from this has done probably more to bring this cause into local awareness than we could have ever done on our own. So that is the beautiful silver lining of this. Right now, the banner is in my office. It has been repaired. It will be going back up on Tuesday. We are not backing down from the fight to make sure that people understand that, yes, of course all lives matter, and of course we understand that. But right now we're talking about black lives and black lives matter. So it will be going back up on Tuesday. I believe we're going to be mounting some trail cams. We're not going down without a fight. So thank you all. Thank you all for doing this good work. And I'll keep you posted.
Thank you. Atadipa. I am this light, pure, selfless awareness. I rely upon this awareness. I do not rely upon concepts of self and other that appear. I do not depend upon beliefs, sensations, and emotions which arise and fall away. Meditative awareness, clear intention, acting wisely, compassionately, and skillfully are this practice. I rely upon this only. I rely upon this ceaselessly. Say it with me. I am this light, pure selfless awareness. I rely upon selfless awareness. I do not rely upon concepts of self and other that appear. I do not depend upon beliefs, sensations, and emotions which arise and fall away. Meditative awareness, clear intention, acting wisely, compassionately, and skillfully are this practice. I rely upon this only. I rely upon this ceaselessly.
Please rise in body or spirit and join me in our opening hymn, number 353, Golden Breaks the Dawn. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we strive to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Paul Fackler, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. As a welcoming congregation, we hope that all visitors, wherever they are on life's journey and whatever their backgrounds, will find a lasting home here. Whether you were raised on the saying, a place for everything, and everything in its place, or the less formal and more magical concept of a junk drawer, which, like the Room of Requirement from the Harry Potter series, you could open at any time of need and find just what you need. You are welcome here. Whether you subscribe to careful indexing, cross-listing, and a hierarchy of paths that lead you quickly and easily to whatever it is that you are seeking, to Tupperware containers, lateral files, Franklin planners, and other habits of highly effective people, or whether entropy, sticky notes, and cryptic messages with the stacking of things is more your cup of tea, you are welcome here. Speaking of tea and coffee, please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by our welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. While you take a moment at this point to disable any electronic random noise generators you have attached to you, please also remember that we are about more than Sunday services and that you can find out about our many activities through our listings in the order of service, through our Facebook page at Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church, and through our website, lcuuc.org. And as always, we welcome you and any and all to join in our broader activities. Welcome once again to all here this morning. We are so pleased that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us. One of the ways we care for our wider community is by contributing to our local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of food, of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have any food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in our service, or ask a child to bring them forward. They can place them in the basket up here. And I invite the children to come forward and enjoy a story.
So I'm going to need some help this morning. I need a book holder, page turner person, so I can read it while somebody else holds the book so we can all see the pictures. Is somebody willing to help me do that? Anybody know this story, Where the Wild Things Are? Do you know this one? Yeah. Would you be willing to help me and hold the book and turn the pages? Yeah, would you? Lydia, thank you, Lydia. Good. Sure, come here, help. Yeah, that's good. So if you hold it and she can turn pages, will that work? We're going to figure this out. So, Where the Wild Things Are, story and pictures by Maurice Sendak. So we've got to turn the pages. Maybe you want to sit on the other side. Can you do that? You want to sit over here? Why don't you sit over here? It might be easier. And turn it again. And turn it again. Are they sticky? There we go. And turn it again. Where the Wild Things Are. Okay. The night Max wore his wolf suit and made mischief of one kind. And turn the page. He made mischief of one kind and mischief of another. Look at that. He's chasing the dog with a, looks like a wooden fork or something. Turn the page. And his mother called him Wild Thing. And Max said, I'll eat you up. And so, well, what happened? He got sent to bed without eating anything. There he is standing in his bedroom, kind of mad. Turn the page. That very night in Max's room, a forest grew. Turn the page. And the forest kept growing. And look at that. Most of his bedroom is gone now. It's mostly forest. Keep going. And grew until his ceiling hung with vines and the walls became the world all around. Now he's in a different place, isn't he? Go ahead. Turn the page. And an ocean tumbled by with a private boat for Max, and he sailed off through the night and day and in and out of weeks and almost over a year to Where the Wild Things Are. Turn the page. Turn the page. Can you hold the book up so everybody can see it? There we go. Good. Good. And when he came to that place where the wild things are, well, they roared their terrible roars and they gnashed their terrible teeth and they rolled their terrible eyes and they showed their terrible claws. And turn the page. And turn the page again. They're the wild things. Keep going. And they made him... Oh, I'm sorry. And then Max said, be still. And he tamed them with his magic trick of staring into all their yellow eyes without blinking even once. And then they... Well, then they were frightened of him, and they called him the most wild thing of all. It's a pretty cool magic trick. And they made him king of all the wild things. And now, cried Max, let the wild rumpus begin. Turn the page. And there they are, dancing. And turn the page. Having a big rumpus, climbing around, hanging off the trees. Looks like they're having fun. There aren't even any words for this rumpus.
That's right.
Now stop, Max said, and sent the wild things off to bed without their supper. And Max, the king of all wild things, was lonely and realized he wanted to be somewhere that someone loved him best of all. And then all around, from far away across the world, he smelled good things to eat. So he gave up being king of where the wild things are. Turn the page. But the wild things cried, "Please, please don't go. We'll eat you up. We love you so." And Max said, "No." The wild things roared their terrible roars, and they gnashed their terrible teeth, and they rolled their terrible eyes, and they showed their terrible claws. But Max stepped into his private boat, and he waved goodbye anyway. Turn the page. And then what happens? Then he sailed back over a year in and out of weeks and through a day and into the night, back into his very own room, where he found his supper waiting. And it was still hot. Thank you. So, that's the end of the story. Who is today's lantern bearer? Do you know who's going to carry the lantern? Great. Good. Would you hand me the book, and you can go up and grab the lantern with Paul.
Thank you.
And you guys can go back to your seats.
Please help sing the children to their classroom. The words are printed in your order of service. This church is a community of ourselves. Its energy and resources are our energy and resources. Its wealth is what we share. As we contribute to the life of this community, we affirm our lives within it. The morning offering will now be given and received. Our thanks for the gifts given and received for the work of this community. This is a time in our service where we share our joys and concerns. We do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting a candle. If you have a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone.
Good morning. My name's Will. Candle of joy for two persons that have come back into our life, my eldest daughter and our first grandson, George William.
This is Jerry. I have a great joy to share, and that is that this month is the fourth anniversary of our church's solar electric system that we as a church did August 11th of 2011. Now generated over 100,000 kilowatt hours of electricity, covered about two-thirds of our electric usage, and the revenues that from the sale of electricity to We Energies is now paid for our entire cost of it. To celebrate, please join us after the service for sunshine cake and solar tea in the social hall.
Hi, this is Mike. I got two candles. One, Nicole celebrated her 17th birthday yesterday. And then the other one, a candle of joy, is celebrating 25 years of wedded bliss with my wonderful wife, Helen.
And this is Helen. And a candle of also joy. My three brothers also share this week with our anniversaries. And also my mother passed away 25 years ago this week.
Hi, this is John, and I have a joy to share. Our daughter-in-law, Jess, has announced that she's gotten through her first trimester of pregnancy, so it'll be a first-time grandparent coming up, hopefully.
Hi, this is Tony. A candle of concern and joy for my dear friend, Ray, who has had brain surgery and seems to be doing okay.
Hi, this is Randy. Kind of a concern that has turned into a joy. Last March, my mother, very active, independent, suffered this massive stroke on her left side. Rehab didn't help, and then during the summer, she had another stroke on the right side, which left her pretty mobile. And then she came down with this roaring infection, which couldn't be treated, and passed away a few weeks ago. So, we miss her, but no, she was ready.
My name is Claire. I have a joy. A few weeks ago, I was hired at Costco, well, CDS Food Services, and it's been a really interesting job, and my supervisor the other day came by and told me what a wonderful job I was doing. It was really nice to hear all that feedback.
Hi, this is Terry. This is a joy and then a concern connected with it. On Friday night, a handful of us were here during that gigantic storm to experience the kirtan with a new group to us, the Bhakti Boys, and it was just absolutely fabulous. And my concern is that they came all the way out here, and there were probably 10 or 12 people. So we'd really like people to respond to their commitment to come out here and provide kirtan with us in this beautiful space. It was just an amazing evening, and if you want to know more about what kirtan is, you can either go on YouTube or you could ask me after the service. Second Friday of each month.
Hi, this is Barb. Last week I asked for a candle of concern for my sister. She came through her surgery just wonderfully. The PATH report is negative. So happy for that.
Hi, this is Amy. I want to light a candle of joy. Our granddaughter Lucy let us know this past week she has been accepted at the University of Lincoln in the UK in England. And she's going to be studying research pharmacology. So we are very, very proud of her.
I'm going
light one final candle for, well, actually one candle for Parker Gunnarsson, who is becoming an Eagle Scout today. He's the scout that built our fire circle and the benches and so on out there. And one final candle for all the joys and concerns we hold in our hearts. Dateline, Los Alamos, New Mexico. Describing it as a harrowing ordeal that he wouldn't wish on his worst enemy, badly shaken 39-year-old senior account manager Daniel Tillison told reporters Friday that he would never again spend a few minutes alone with his thoughts. My God, it was just awful. That's the last time I will ever take a moment to reflect myself, a profusely sweating Tillison said, before unsteadily pouring a large glass of whiskey and drinking it down in a single gulp. The worst part is, I actually did this to myself. I actually said, I think I'd like to take a little time alone to think about some things. Then, for a few brief, horrible moments, I looked deep within myself and saw who I really was. It was honestly the scariest, most nauseating experience of my life. Tillison said that if he ever found himself alone again, and without the distraction of music, the internet, television, or video games, he would repeatedly hit himself in the head with the handiest large, blunt object to prevent any sort of return to his own innermost thoughts. The Onion, America's finest news source. On the other hand, people will do anything, no matter how absurd, to avoid facing their own souls. Dr. Carl Jung, founder of analytical psychology. Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a few moments of silent thought, meditation, or the spirit of prayer.
For years, Ellen has twisted her mind into knots, trying to figure out why her life went awry. All she knew for certain is that sometime in middle school, she started down a self-destructive path that led her to what she describes as her train wreck of an existence. Now pushing 50, with three failed marriages in her wake and constantly battling addictions to alcohol, other drugs, and compulsive spending, she wants to know why. What happened back then that got me here, she wondered. While there certainly can be value in looking back, particularly if doing so helps us feel that life makes more sense and furthers our self-knowledge, in isolation, this process can also impede our efforts to move forward. It can be a bit like trying to get somewhere by walking backward, slow, clunky, and prone to stumbles. Maybe to get myself together, I need to address all these unresolved issues from my past, Ellen pondered, mouthing the party line that has shaped much of modern psychology from Freud to the present. For the most part, psychotherapy seeks to alter effects, depression, addictions, etc., by addressing causes. Unresolved issues from the past are, well, in the past. We may carry their stain into the present, but we cannot time travel back to address them in their nascent state or become the self that made those decisions back then. What we can do is focus on what draws us forward more than on what holds us back. Excerpts from a blog by Philip Chard, psychotherapist, columnist for Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, blogger and widely traveled public speaker, including here at LCUUC. On the other hand, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. George Santayana, philosopher, essayist, poet, and novelist. Here ends the second reading.
So, there's this, and then there's that, on this hand, but then on the other hand, well, what's a person to do? How many other hands are there? So many opinions. Right? So many opinions. So what's in your drawer? That came out of a conversation that happened at the Sangha, which meets here on Thursday nights. The drawer is an emotional, it's a metaphor for the emotional stuff that we've managed to collect. Most of us have a drawer or two, maybe in the kitchen or maybe it's in the workshop. You know, you put the things in there that don't really have a terribly good place anywhere else. It's kind of that drawer, you know. If you can't find something, go look in that one, you know, the junk drawer, the extra drawer, I don't know what you call it. Maybe it's that lower filing cabinet drawer that's packed full of stuff that you probably shouldn't throw away, but probably don't really have much use for right now, but maybe someday you will. And so you accumulate. And maybe that drawer grows to the size of a small room, which is what I have at my house. Or maybe it's your attic in the house. Or is it the basement? Or maybe it's the garage. When was the last time you were actually able to park a car in the garage? We tend to collect things. And those things, they tend to eventually restrict what we're able to do because we have so much stuff. Right? The car now sits out on the driveway instead of in the garage. Right? We don't really do much in that room anymore because there's too much other stuff in that room. It becomes difficult to navigate, it becomes difficult to move around, and those things start to instruct what you're able to do with your life. They start to maybe impede with some choices. If they stick around long enough, they become part of the landscape, part of the furniture, and you're just used to walking around that pile of stuff. Maybe there's a pile of laundry like that. Do you remember that back in college? You know, you kind of walked past that pile. The same happens with us emotionally as well. And we tend to walk past those things, and we tend to kind of forget about all that stuff that's packed away in that emotional drawer back there. And, Daniel Tillerson, apparently from the Onion article, decided to take a few moments and reflect on himself and open up one of those drawers. And he quickly closed it again. Now, that's a satirical article. But I think it is indicative of what happens for many of us when we start to try to look inside and see what's in there. Who am I? Why do I react the way I do to dogs? Why do dogs make me angry? Why am I scared of water? And so when the annual family vacation comes and we go to the lake, I spend the whole time on the shore because I'm scared of water. But when I think about wanting to look at why am I scared of water, it just makes me kind of anxious and nervous. Now I'll go and make another gin and tonic, right? Or if I'm shorter and I don't do gin and tonics, I'll go find my video game, right? And calm myself and distract myself, and everything will be fine again, and I can move forward again. Now the other option is to try to reflect backwards, as Philip Chard was saying, right? He says, while there certainly can be value in looking back, particularly if doing so helps us feel that life makes more sense and furthers our self-knowledge. And here's the key phrase. In isolation, this impedes our efforts to move forward. When's the last time you tried to clean out the garage? How successful were you? How clean did it get? How long did it stay clean? How many times have you cleaned out the junk drawer in the kitchen? And what's in that drawer now? Right? That messy drawer in the desk, is it messy again? So doing this alone, on your own, might not be the most effective, most efficient way to start unpacking these things which we carry forward with us from our past. Maybe if Daniel Tillerson, the guy in the article, if he had looked just one layer deeper, if he had looked underneath the nausea and underneath the profuse sweating, he would have seen a little bit more of who he really is. He only got as far as looking at the protections and the defenses and the injuries. He didn't look deeper. He didn't recognize any of the structure that lies there. He never got to the point of noticing that he is a conditioned creature, no different than a rat in a maze or a pigeon in a cage that's been trained to peck at a button to get food. This is what we are. This is how we respond. We are trained, conditioned to react to stimuli today based on experiences we've had in the past. And when similar stimuli show up today, we respond with the conditioning that has brought us to this place, and we react in a similar way. I still don't swim because I'm still afraid of water, but I still don't know why, and it still makes me a little nervous, and I'll just go and make another gin and tonic, and everything will be fine. Now, most of us are reasonably well-adjusted folks, and we get along reasonably well in society, and most of us hold reasonable jobs and have reasonable relationships, and it seems to work. You can put that stuff back in the drawer. If you don't have enough drawer space, rent a storage locker. The amount of storage space in America for every man, woman, and child is staggering, absolutely staggering, because we know how to accumulate. We don't know how to set aside. Google has solved that problem for us, right? Unlimited email storage. You don't have to delete anything anymore, right? The inbox has no bottom, and it works, except for when it doesn't. Now, this is optional work. This is not necessarily simple or easy to do. It is optional. And I say with kind of a mean, almost slightly sarcastic edge, you could spend the last few days of your life laying on the couch with your hand in the bag of potato chips, watching reruns of Super Bowl highlights from the 60s. You could do that. Doing this inner work, this inner reflective work, is completely optional. But if you did, you might begin to notice some of the conditioning that drives you, some of the patterns that have dictated your entire life into adulthood. Carl Jung had a phrase for some of these. He termed it shadow. This is shadow work, the things we hide, deny, and repress, and the things which drive our behavioral reactions today. You don't think you're conditioned? You think you know yourself? I knew myself for a very long time until I started, with the help of outside advisors and guides, teachers, mentors, ministers, therapists, I started to notice I'm patterned. I am conditioned to react to stimuli, and I do it unconsciously. So with your permission, I'd like to try a little thought experiment. The title of the song that Tracy previously played, Into White, you remember it? Built my house of barley rice, green paper walls and water ice, tables of paper wood and windows of light, and everything emptying into white. A very soft, gentle floating off into peacefulness. How delightful. How peaceful. How safe and serene. Now imagine for a minute that the lyrics of the song were everything emptying into black. Did that jar at all? Was there a little bit of discord, a little bit of collision in there? What's happened to you and I in the ways that we grew up, in the culture that we live in the society that we are immersed in? What's happened to us that we are conditioned to respond to the word white in this way? And to the word black in that way. I never had a teacher who sat down and told me, okay, white feels like this and black feels like that. That never happened for me. I suspect it probably never happened for you as well. It is just part of the air that we breathe. It's part of the energy that pervades culture, society, community in these days. It's been here for a while. There are many other forms of conditioning. But that one might be an interesting one to look at this morning. This is the conditioning that drives us to react and respond the way we do. It's also the same conditioning that drove that person with a razor knife to respond the way they did. This is the game of fist, stick, knife, and gun. It is played with the emotional junk in our drawers. We have hardware and biochemistry that drives us to become emotional hoarders of evasions, avoidances, likes, dislikes, hates, loves, denials, manipulations, power plays, threats, extortions, and yes, even vaguely threatening public displays of vandalism. How is it that we get to this place? All of us are in this place. We are all trained and conditioned to react in our own particular way. For me, one of my cultural conditionings would be to grab a cup of coffee and during social circle cluck and feel kind of self-righteously justified about how indignant I feel about how awful this situation is. And I can feel good about how strongly I feel about how negative this is, and I'll go find someone else who shares that opinion with me, and we can pat ourselves on the back about how we both agree about how this isn't right. I suspect there might be something similar happening to the person who held that razor knife and cut that square out of the fabric. How did they get to that place? How did I get to this place? This place of evasions and avoidances and likes and dislikes and knowing what's good and knowing what's bad in a world that is so complex and so subtle that Walt Whitman's description of humanity, his description of himself, was, "I am huge. I contain multitudes." People cannot be reduced to sound bites and to quick, short phrases that play well on television. It just doesn't work. We are much more complicated than that. Ask anyone in the healthcare profession. What to do and how to do it is subtle, is tricky, and it's not easy to tell. But what happens for most of us is very similar to what happened to Daniel Tillerson. When we look inside, it sometimes becomes a little difficult to admit to what is true. It's not socially appropriate. It's not politically correct. It's not culturally sensitive for me to admit to the ways in which I have been conditioned, not by my desire, by the fact that this is the air that I breathe. These are the parents that I had. This is the home that I grew up in. These are the radio stations and the television programs that I listened to. And I was slowly, slowly trained, without my even knowing it, to respond and react in certain ways. You've probably heard this phrase, invisible privilege. That certainly doesn't happen to me. I work hard for what I have. Oh, well, except I'm a middle-class white guy with health coverage and a retirement program growing out up in the upper Midwest, and I'm not in a high crime zone, and I have cars at work. I have a concrete floor. I have safe drinking water, and I don't have to worry about being shot when I lay down in my bed at night. That puts me in an extremely elite class. And when I walk into a store, and I have gray hair, and I have reasonable shoes on, and I have pants that are clean and neat, without my realizing it, that person gets a message. That person that I interact with gets a message. I am treated in a different way because of how I am perceived. Some of that is by my choice. I choose what shoes to wear, but I have the money to be able to buy shoes. Some people don't. This plays into this condition. And we have an opportunity. I'm inviting you to find an opportunity to start looking at the ways in which you are trained and conditioned. Find someone or some place to begin or continue to do your work. If you outgrow your teacher, find another one. Once you realize who you really are, once you start to recognize some of these patterns, some of these conditions, and you're able to begin changing them, what happens? Well, your experience of life is going to be different. Things will be a little more pleasant. You'll be calmer, more collected, more courageous, more curious, more compassionate. But there'll be another interesting thing that happens. Those people that you hang out with, the ones you live with, the ones you love, the ones you work with, the ones you play with, they're going to have a much more pleasant time hanging out with you because you won't be bringing your junk drawer with you. All that unfinished, partially done emotional work, all that suppressed, repressed, oppressed stuff, the things that might wake you up at 3:30 in the morning, the things that you take those anti-anxiety meds for, the things for which the depression meds help, those things aren't going to interfere with your relationships in the way they do now. They're not going to influence the ways in which you can engage with others, not in the same way. Our minister, Amy, has a tagline at the bottom of her emails. Have you ever received an email from her? You know what it says? Revelation is not sealed. And likewise, I propose that who you are is not permanently fixed. With a little help, you can change who you are permanently at a deep core level. But it requires great effort. It requires persistence. And it requires help from the outside. Someone to help shine the light on the way back. Someone to help you unpack these things. so that when you go back in and you reflect, you're not re-traumatizing yourself. You're helping to heal the trauma that's there. And I can assure you, we are all traumatized. Some of us with a capital T trauma, and some of us with a lowercase t trauma. But no one gets through this unscarred or unscathed. Now, how exactly you make these changes is a little difficult to put into words. And as I said before, it's subtle and complicated. I can tell you that there are traditions that have a reasonably sound, proven track record. And it's not on the one side of the scale where it's purely analytical reason from the neck up, Gottman style therapy, right? If I can only collect your history exactly, specifically, down to the final comma and period, then I can tell you who you are and I can tell you why you're going to react and respond the way you do. That only tells you where you are. You still need to find a way to move forward. On the other hand, resorting only to intuitive, instinctive, reactionary engagements with the world probably isn't helpful either. And there are many traditions that you can do that through: reading tea leaves, tarot cards, pendulums, yarrow stalks, or there's a whole new raft of ways of trying to function purely intuitively that keep getting invented, and people are happy to take your money for advice, which you could probably easily give to yourself. So that's the other extreme. Somewhere in the middle is the middle way, and this is Buddhism. This is the foundational, original teachings, not the religion that evolved from it, but these fundamental teachings of the middle way. Use some of both, some head and some heart, to inform the way in which you move forward. Look inside and see what's there. Notice what the reactions and responses are on the outside. You can use that as a way of finding out, how am I conditioned? How do I react? How do I respond? So the way this happens in Zen, which is my lineage, you just sit with it. Suzuki Roshi was asked, what is the best way to meditate? What is the most effective thing to do? And his response, Shikantanza, only just sit. The original instructions were sit down, face the wall. Or actually, sit down, shut up, face the wall. And if you haven't figured it out, sit some more, face some more, be quiet some more. How much time have you got? For most folks, that took somewhere between 10 and 30 years to happen, to finally understand everything, to finally make sense of everything, and to be liberated from some or many or most of those conditioned patterns that run our lives. I don't know if I have that much time left. And I can tell you, the lifestyle I lead doesn't allow me to sit and face the wall 6 or 7 hours a day. I have other things I need to do, so I need to find other ways. And in Zen, when I choose to sit and meditate, instructions, the invitation is to breathe into it. Just sit with this feeling. Just be present with it. Don't ignore it with pleasant thoughts. Don't hide it with lofty ideals or solutions. Don't breathe into it. Don't try to breathe it out. Just keep it suspended in front of you like a burning coin, a coin that's too hot to touch, but too intriguing to turn your eyes away from. The experiences I've had will never change, but I can change as a result of my experiences if I'm willing to look at them, recognize them, admit to them, and discover what these patterns are that have brought me to this place in my life. So find a place. There are many, many guides, many teachers, many traditions, many ways. Some of this can be done all alone by yourself. But as Philip Chard cautioned, in isolation, when done on your own, it can in fact impede your efforts. I encourage you to find a community, find a mentor, find a teacher, find a guide. There is no shame in admitting that you're a conditioned creature. That shame is what's prevented me from doing my work for most of my life. Because I was just like Daniel Tillerson. I'd dig down a little bit, I'd get freaked out about what I saw, and I'd go and hide it. I'd bury it, I'd cover it up with something. Not anymore. Shame is the only acid. It's the only substance. Shame is the substance that can corrode human souls. I suggest you stop using it. There's no need for it anymore. We are all in the same boat. We are all in the same place. In many ways, I am no different. I'm exactly the same as the person who cut that word out of the banner. I also react and respond to my environmental conditioning. Now, one of the ways in which we might be different, and I don't know that because I've never met the person, I would enjoy meeting them. I'd want to ask them some questions. How did you get to this place? How did you feel when you were cutting that out? In what ways do you believe this moves the world forward? Because I too have feelings when I see that. And I too have thoughts about how to move the world forward. One thing I know for certain is that I have never been moved forward by being shamed by people. And so I encourage you, stop shaming yourself, stop shaming others, but start asking questions about who you are and ask questions about how those other people are. How did they get to that place? How did you get to this place? So that together we can move forward and create a world of love and caring that is defended and ordered. So be it. So, it's time to stump the chump. This is Polylog. And in our tradition, if you have a question or a comment or other rumination on the sermon's subject this morning, please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone and briefly tell us who you are and then share your thoughts. I would love to hear what you heard. I only know what I've said, but I don't know what you've heard. And I'd be very interested in knowing.
Good morning, I'm Barbara. It was in the beginning, and it just hit me again how we treat the elderly. You can all hear me, right?
A little louder.
I can still remember my father was an extremely proud man. He was not my favorite person, okay? But I remember one time, he had been a salesman, and I remember going into a store with him, and he was very used to getting respect and pretty good at getting what he wanted. I think by this time he was about 80. And this person you could just tell, he looked down on him and wasn't paying any attention. And I saw my father shrivel up. He turned, he got shorter, his shoulders slumped. It was unbelievable. I mean, right in front of my eyes. And I can still remember that. And I know I'm getting close to his age. And I'm telling you, I really watch that I walk straight and that I look people in the eye and all of this. But I think we all need to be really aware of what happens to the elderly. And that's what you reminded me of, how that happened. And the conditioning, how he got to be as proud as he was. Well, he went through a lot. He fought on the Russian front, for one thing. But how he was so subdued and became nothing. That's also terrible. And he was also part Jewish.
Thank you for remembering. It would be a wonderful thing to sit with and just remember some more and try to ask those questions. How did these things happen? How did it get to this?
Hi, this is Helen. And I grew up, when you talk about conditioning, in the military atmosphere, all over the country, not all over the world, unfortunately. And cleaning out my drawers, it wasn't hard to find, we clean out our drawers because we were moving so many times. So that was the physical part, but, you know, it's as maybe we'll get there someday, a lot of the mental part is not part of the, my conditioning to clean it out. We just kind of moved to the next place and dealt with it. So it was very, in front of my face when my dad retired and we moved to Wisconsin. So it was very different. And now that I've lived in a place for 20 years, I'm trying to clean out the physical and, you know, trying to work with the mental. So I appreciate this community because you can find some people here or finding the mentors. Find the people that will help you along. Because you can't do it, you know, I started on that road. Do it in isolation, so I appreciate those thoughts.
Beautifully said. Thank you.
Good morning again. My name's Will. There was a word that came to mind to me through the sermon of empathy, and to live with empathy, to understand others' plight. For me, I'm very fortunate in that I get to coach young people, specifically in skiing, where we're in an environment where it's very harsh and you deal with both the mental and the physical, and to help young people unpack in their young lives the things that they come before you with is a real joy, a challenge, all things. And so it helps me connect with how much I take along with me. And in a physical sense, I have a backpack when I go on the mountain and I can only bring with me what fits. And I always feel like I need to leave something there with them to lighten my load on my way home. So thank you for the sermon and bringing that back to mind.
Hi, I'm Terry. I am Terry. And this really segues with what Will just said. Tony and I have been supporting the Southern Poverty Law Center for many, many years, and they send out a magazine each month, and they also have curriculums for school children, which is called Teaching Tolerance. And when I see the way that adults are, with whom I don't agree with their philosophies or their approach, I think about the children that are coming up now and how if they could learn about tolerance and empathy and how different the world could be. And this is a program that's available to all schools if they wish to utilize it. Our daughter taught for many, many years in a school full of underprivileged children. Everyone in that whole school had free lunch, and they provided free breakfast also. Many children came to school without proper shoes or coats or whatever. And I'm really proud of her in the way that she made a concerted effort and succeeded in having empathy, not feeling sorry for, but understanding. And I've learned a lot from her. And I think what's really lovely about the Unitarian Church is that I really never thought about the difference between Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter until about a week and a half ago. And then I started watching things on YouTubes and listening to people's podcasts and TED Talks, and it opens my eyes to understand the patterns that I grew up with, and then that I really have the privilege of being able to change those patterns. I hope that I will always be open to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Rick. And a few years ago, I made a real concerted effort to clean out my drawer that had all the shoulds in it.
Yeah.
And I got rid of most of the shoulds. And thank you, Eric, because it needs cleaning out again. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, stop shoulding on yourself, right?
Yeah. I'm Kathy, and I go away for the winter. I'm a member of a UU church in Naples, Florida, and once a month there's an evening event called The Odyssey, and what it is a different member of the congregation is asked to talk about themselves for an hour, and then there's a Q&A afterwards. And I was asked to do it this past March, and I said, give me some time to think about it. I don't know. But I ended up presenting my Odyssey, and I sort of approached it. You know, I sort of made a timeline of my life, different phases of my life, and I worked really hard to think about, okay, what did I internalize from what was going on, you know, in my youth, my parents, all of that, and, you know, as I became independent and, you know, became a parent and a grandparent, all of that. And I have to say it was extremely helpful and valuable, and it gave me some realizations that I hadn't really they hadn't been on my radar screen before that time. And I highly recommend people considering just doing that, just thinking about your life and, okay, where was I at that point and what did I internalize, and see what you come up with. And then, you know, maybe you want to go to a therapist after that. I don't know.
Or a big glass of whiskey, right? But I'd suggest the prior rather than the latter. Yeah. So I think we have time for one more meeting.
My name is Arlene, and I don't know if I should have brought this up at the prayers and concerns, or it seemed to fit in now too. I've been in the process of getting ready to move into retirement home, and so I'm downloading and at the same time clearing up everything. And at the same time, I have to, in between times, I have to move in with my daughter. And it happens that she and I have been very hard to get along with each other for forever, as I can remember. And so this is going to be a real test for me. And I'm already trying to figure out, where did it all happen and where did it all start? Why do we get along this way? So it's going to be a challenge, but I'm thinking about it every day before I go so that I can work with it when I get there and before I get there. And I ask for your prayers on that too. Thank you.
Please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing our closing hymn, number 1010, We Give Thanks. Tracy will play it through one time first.
Thank you.
This, in the end, is the only kind of courage that is required of us. The courage to face the strangest, most unusual, inexplicable experiences that can meet us. Rainer Maria Rilke. Go in peace.